This week's been crazy, hasn't it? But here we are, back together again, surviving every single rock throws at us to share some special moments.
Brian tried to tell me everything will turn out all right. I buried myself under the blankets because he was wrong, and I didn't want to face that reality just yet. I never thought the night could last so long, but there I was, repeating the way you said, "I love you too, baby," until my head was a ventriloquist, your voice spouting from lips that you had conquered but did not yet own. I never said it first, but you knew, because you had watched me closer than I had anticipated you would. I was alone, but I was surrounded by you. I said that you mattered to me, once, just quiet enough that you wouldn't hear, but loud enough so that I would know I'd said it. You said, "I want to be the name on all your pages." I assumed you were crazy, but I kissed you anyway. I meant it. Maybe everything will turn out all right. The aforementioned Brian is, of course, Brian Wilson. I feel sometimes like Brian Wilson is guiding me in my life. I know that sounds ridiculous, but like when I listen to the Beach Boys and their music, a lot of which is written by Brian Wilson, I feel like a lot of it is like the things that I need to hear in that moment. And it's like having a friend who's like, "Hey, don't worry, it's, you know, this is, you know, this is how things are gonna go, this is how things are gonna work out." A song that always feels like that for me is "Don't Worry, Baby," which we love that song. Everybody loves that song, I'm sure. And the resounding message of that is just everything will turn out all right. And I do try and imagine that life will be like that and that everything will be okay in the end. Some may call that delusional. I do not care. I try and be positive. I know sometimes it seems like I'm a negative person, but I do make an effort to at least try and imagine that maybe everything's going to be good. However, when it comes to relationships, it's like sometimes I preempt things and I'll be like, "So listen, I'm awful. You know, don't get caught up in the in whatever it is that's made you think I'd be a wonderful person to be with, you know. It's probably going to be awful and you'll have a terrible time." So I was just thinking about this one particular person who didn't really want to listen to that. And then, you know, I don't think I wanted to either, because I wanted it to work. And so even though outwardly I was being very negative and this isn't going to work, this is dumb, inwardly I was like, yeah, I totally want this to work. And he knew. He caught me slipping, and that's on me. I mean, it didn't actually work out, so I guess I was right, but I wanted to kind of capture that moment where I briefly thought it would and make it last a little bit longer. You talk to me like I've been lobotomized. Like the way that I've been traumatized means I love to be patronized. Maybe I don't mind watching you do everything you think I want you to do. Stop talking so slow, my love, or my ideas will catch up. I watch you doing what you think you should do. Without a single cue, you cut up my food, you lace up my shoes. I'm a project for you, the flower baby from your youth. You think if you don't let me die that I'll survive. I never had the heart to say that my heart still beats whether you micromanage it or not. That's another one I found sort of hiding in one of my notebooks. But I could literally, and this is, I feel, an indication of how bad my handwriting truly is. I could literally only make out one line, which was something about how somebody else knew that I liked being patronized. And I was like, okay, what does she mean by that? But then I thought about it and I was like, yeah, kind of. I don't know. I feel like because there's a lot of pressure in my life, I kind of gravitate towards people that are going to alleviate some of that, maybe. So anyways, I was like, let me try and figure this out and try and put it together as like a real thing that can exist on its own, unlike me, apparently. And as I was going through it, I was like, you know what, actually, if I'm being realistic, I am quite self-sufficient, you know. Maybe I like the idea of someone, you know, looking after me and whatever, but I can survive by myself. And I think that's an important thing, you know. Sometimes it's nice to have someone, you know, take care of you, like Paddington. But it's also important to figure out how to do it yourself. And I feel like I have reached a place where I've struck that balance, which is great because, you know, people are shady and you never know when they're going to just sort of disappear. So it's good to be able to sort of pick up where they left off and be able to cut up your own food and lace your own shoes, as it were. But I looked down at it on the paper, that one line, and I was just like, wow, okay, I really came for myself there. I really read myself. Wow, okay. I feel like from the other notes surrounding it that I could read, that was probably around sort of when I was about 17, maybe. It's kind of concerning that I was so self-aware of my nonsense even then, but well, you know, nobody knows you better than you know yourself, unfortunately. I think my life has just been this cycle of being perpetually sick of my own ridiculousness, but also embracing it and kind of being here for it, because it's like I'm a messy, dumb bitch who lives for drama and being ridiculous, but also I'm kind of fun. For myself, anyway. I'm not looking for criticism right now, and I don't know how other people feel about it, but they probably all think I'm a complete moron, but I can live with that, you know. And they don't have to. That's the great thing. Life is a constant carousel, and you can get on and you can get off and you can do what you want. I'm here for the long haul with me because I have no other choice. But everyone else is free to do what they want, and that's kind of cool. She was wild, wrapping me up in her world, dragging me into her drama, capturing me in chaos, until we were still, stuck in one moment, parked outside a bar with a menu that mocked our means. I dream of the car, the scent of her cigarette, the way she flowed from topic to topic, as she glowed in the warm night and all of its moonlight. I see her sometimes when I close my eyes, no matter how many times you tell me that one day I'll find someone new. I guess she's an angel forever. I think she'd like that. But I've tried so hard to forget the way she made me feel that I'm not sure I can remember. That was, it started life as some song lyrics that I wasn't sure I could make into a song. Because what happened was, I had the first verse, which I felt was really what I wanted. And then from like the chorus down, I was just like, I hate this. But I couldn't, I couldn't think of anything else. So I was like, you know what, I'm gonna take a break from it. I also scolded myself for remembering yet again that I was doing songwriting in the wrong order according to the experts. But I put it away for a while. And then I managed to turn it into a song last weekend, because I remembered that I don't have to stick to the rules of song structures, and actually a lot of songs that I have written and released don't. And some of those are more successful than the ones I've done that have followed traditional structures. So I was like, hey girl, just remember there's no rules and you can do what you want. So I did. But I still decided to take some of the parts that I wasn't really using as much, and I decided to turn them into something else. It's like creative recycling, maybe we could call that. I don't know. What do you think? I like that. but I have no idea what I'm going to do with it, because I have this plan. So I have the Christmas song I talked about last week, which I know I'm gonna release sometime around like November, because I don't want to release it in October, because I've already got a big thing that I'm planning, and I don't want to like have to promote two things at once and overshadow myself, you know what I mean? So, and Christmas, you know, is a tricky time, because if I release it in December, everybody else's Christmas songs are already out, so what's the point? So in the great tradition of Mariah Carey, I will probably be releasing it in November. So it was really weird, because someone I knew when I was at uni last year, they sent me a message on Facebook and they were like, I really like your Christmas song. And I was like, oh, thanks. And they said they had it in their Christmas playlist, and I was like, oh, okay. And it's weird when you create something and you put it out there, but then people actually engage with it and you're like, oh shit, I forgot that was gonna happen, which is really dumb, but you know, it's like, yeah, I put it out there, but oh my God, you listened to it or you bought it? What the hell? What the hell, man? But, you know, it's a weird sort of feeling. But, yeah, so I don't know when this other thing that I wrote is, because I wrote something else, and I'm thinking I'm gonna do something at the start of next year, because I know I've spoken about this part before, I've been working on this like project where I look at moments from my life that I feel were pivotal, and relationships from my life that I feel were pivotal, and I'm talking about them and I'm writing about them. So I think maybe it's going to tie in with that. Oh, I've just dropped my notebook there. Not that I can read any of the notes, as you know, but still. So I'm thinking of doing something like that, sort of January, February time. I don't know. But I really kind of wrote that about sort of about people's reactions to grief when you lose somebody that's important to you, and people try and help, because of course they do, because most people are nice like that, but how it just kind of makes everything worse, because you end up just kind of falling back into thinking about, why do people have to leave? Why do things have to end, you know? And then you're thinking about how great the person was, and you kind of get lost in the memories, and it's pretty dangerous but necessary. I feel like I do that a lot, even with people who are actually still alive, which is even more dangerous, because then I sometimes do dumb shit like contacting them. Ugh, can't be dealing with that. It's a mess. Literally a nightmare. Are you looking for a platform where you can have your voice heard? Find your home and find your voice on Rumble, the brand new video platform where you can share your thoughts, express your passions, and find like-minded people and creators. Download Rumble from the App Store or visit rumble.me to find out more. Okay, so today we're going to talk about something really fun, uplifting, and wonderful. I'm joking, we're not. We're talking about paedophiles. So there's this push to include paedophiles in the LGBT community. It comes around every now and again, whether it's an obnoxious think piece about, you know, will we one day look at the way we treat paedophiles the same way we look at how we treat, you know, treated gays back in the day, as if those two situations are the same, which they're not. Or there'll be something about how we should let paedophiles come to pride parades, or, you know, just something like that will come up. And then the whole discussion starts again. There will be a lot of deflection, where some people will say, oh, you know, this whole paedophile acceptance thing isn't real. It's just a trick. It's a right-wing thing. It's not real. They're making it up to make us look bad. I understand why people want that to be the case, because they don't want to think of the LGBT community being used in this way. And I will concede that some of the efforts are blatant troll attempts, but we have to be realistic. Some of it isn't. There is genuine people out there who are trying to push for this, and I think it is dangerous to pretend that that isn't the case. I think that as a community, we have to be mindful of that. So there's that little disclaimer out of the way. So, I don't think it's fair to the LGBT community to expect us to accept paedophiles into our movements and our communities and our spaces. I don't. Firstly, I think that being LGBT and being a paedophile are two very different things. For a start, being gay or being a lesbian or being bisexual or trans is generally not something that goes away. It's not something that that medical intervention can do anything about. That's why conversion therapy doesn't work. You can, you know, back in the day when they would, you know, force you to watch, you know, straight porn, or, you know, give you drugs to make you throw up when you looked at someone of the same gender to try and sort of train you out of being, you know, gay or something, it doesn't work. It's because you can't change that. It doesn't go anywhere. It's still there. You can pretend it's not there and you can try and ignore it, but you will still be who you are. However, there is scientific evidence that, you know, there is medical intervention possible, psychological intervention possible, where they can help people who have attractions to children to manage the risks of offending, and in some cases to be able to form healthy and appropriate relationships with people of appropriate ages. You know, to the point where in some cases it is believed that they may have been able to reduce the risk of offending to like almost zero. So in the first instance, I don't really know, you know, it's not like they have no way of dealing with this. You know, my sexuality, for example, I cannot stop being bisexual. It's not going to go away. I've spent time wishing it would, but it won't. So it's not the same thing anyway in the first instance, you know. So that's one point. Secondly, being gay or being bisexual or lesbian or trans is not something that comes with a risk of harming other people. If you, for example, me, as a bisexual person, I can be attracted to men, women, and so on. But they, you know, it's not dependent. My attraction to them is not dependent on them being below a certain age. But for a paedophile, they are. They're dependent on the person being a child for them to be attracted to them. And that comes with a risk of harm. Because, and, you know, people are trying to argue against this, but I mean, the science really says the opposite. Sexual activity can be very harmful for children, not just physically, but emotionally and mentally. Even things like just talking online, that's a very common thing at the moment. There's a big trend of, I think I've spoken about it before online, there's a big trend of videos of people who have set up decoy accounts of children, and then they've arrived and apprehended people who are attempting to talk to children online. And even things like that are incredibly harmful. Even if they don't go through with meeting a child and they just talk to them and sexualize them online, that can be incredibly harmful for the child. So again, that's a huge difference. LGBT people living their lives are not directly at risk of harming people. Paedophiles, it's a different story, because their entire attraction hinges on something that is harmful. So we're not the same in that respect either. And, you know, the key thing about the LGBT community is it is a movement. It's activism. It is, you know, gaining equal rights for, you know, for LGBT people. We want the same rights that heterosexual cisgender people have, right? So for me, I want to have the right to marry somebody of my own gender and the opposite gender. I want to have the right to not be fired from my workplace or discriminated against because of my sexuality, right? You know, things like that. So, and I want those rights for other people like me around the world, because it doesn't stop just because I have those rights and freedoms, you know. But me asking for the same things, like same marital rights, same workplace rights, that is quite different from asking society to accept something that is harmful to other people. Me having the right to marry a woman does not hurt anyone. Nobody is going to have psychological trauma from that. Nobody is going to have any real, you know, genuine hurt from that. There might be a few people that throw a bit of a tantrum because they hate the idea of two women being together, but it's not going to genuinely hurt anybody. Somebody wanting the right to have a relationship with a child, that's harmful. And it's not an equal right. Other, you know, straight people, gay people, bi people, trans people, none of us have a right to do something that's genuinely hurting other people. You know? So, again, not the same. And this leads me to the major point of what my issue with this whole thing is. The LGBT community is not a dumping ground for the things that society does not want to acknowledge or engage with. We are not there to take responsibility for all the parts of society that people don't want. We are not there to be a home for the bits of the world that we're ashamed of. We don't owe it to anyone to be a home for paedophiles. Why should we? You know, first and foremost, we have nothing in common with them. Secondly, there are lots of young LGBT people, and they are we just going to invite in a bunch of people that are going to put them at risk? Why are young LGBT people expected to go through that? That's ludicrous. And you know what? Our community as a whole is put at risk by doing this, because it opens us up to even more stigma, even more, well, in this case, it would be well-earned if we were stupid enough to do it, but criticism. It puts us in a position where society is going to look at us, look at the advances we've made, look at the way that we have interacted with society and said, look, we're just like you. We're normal, we're not hurting anyone, we just want to have the same life as you. And it just spits all over that, and it just says, actually, no, see, we've invited in these people that do this really bad thing that everyone doesn't like, sorry. You know, we've got to give them the right to do that now. That's what we're fighting for. Like, it would set back the progress that LGBT communities have made by decades. You know, it would be so self-destructive, so harmful. And why do we owe it to them? You know, like I said, it's a harmful thing. They have to know that realistically. And there is help and treatment available. This is not something that they have to be martyrs about. They don't have to live like that. They don't. If it's a harmful thing, they must know that. And there is help available. So, realistically speaking, nobody really has to spend their whole life dealing with that, dealing with the potential to hurt others. It doesn't have to happen. There is treatment available. They can get help. They can live healthier, better lives. But if they choose not to, it is not the LGBT community's responsibility to take care of them. We have our own problems. We are not society's island of misfit toys. We are not the place where you can throw all of the things you don't want. I don't know, man. That's just how I feel. I don't think that there should be an acceptance of a sexual fetish that is so harmful. I don't. Call me an angsty, repressed Catholic. Call me sex negative, whatever. I don't care. I think that people's safety should come before people's... Say it isn't so. Say you haven't figured me out. You utter bastard. You know all about me. Weaving through my wayward games to pin me down. Playfully pushing me out of my comfort cavern. Until I am uncomfortable with how comfortable I am with you. You ask me if I want to live my life alive, or if I'm happy playing dead. I said something vague and your eyes hit the sky. You hold me so tight, I worry I will meld with you completely. We take our days like you used to take your drugs. It's enough for me that you said I keep you clean. Meaning so much makes my wings itch. I am desperate to see a new face in the mirror. One who doesn't need to impress you. One who has grown past my need to flee the scene when life gets too good. This is the part where it's different. There will be days where it's different. Like, maybe life really is what you make it. And I'm stronger when I'm weak for you. It's really confusing to both fear and want commitment at the same time. That's kind of a constant state I find myself in, because I'm like, I really want like really kind of romantic, special, meaningful relationships with people. Also, I am scared of that. I guess it's like some kind of self-destruction brought on by self-loathing or something. I don't know. The weirdest thing is, though, it's like I want to run from it, but not because I think that there's something that I want more or anything like that. Because, I mean, sort of the way that I work as a person is I kind of become fixated by people for a long time, and it tends to be just them, and it's like there's nobody else in the world, and it's like I want to be with them so much, but also the thought of being with them like keeps me up at night, and not in a fun way, more like a lying there at 3 o'clock in the morning thinking like, but what if it happens and then what, you know? How do I fix that? I don't know. Just find someone as dramatic and ridiculous as me, I guess, and hope that it all works out. Unfortunately, there are not many. Because life is cruel and unfair. But I hope
I will figure it out. Eventually. Either that, or I'll just sort of go down the short list of people before and just be like, go on, have me back, it'll be a laugh, go on, it'll be fun, go on, and see what happened. Actually, I'm probably not going to do that because I think I've talked about this before. I just kind of disappear from their lives and try not to reappear ever again, because, you know, sometimes it is better that there is no sequel. Darling, on the DLR, do not resuscitate me if I'm caught slipping. Let me sleep forever in the daydream of your debut in my life. It's only 9:30, but I know I'll be awake all night. Are there stars in your eyes, or did I drink more than I thought? I feel sick, and I can't be sure if it's because of the alcohol or the affection. I'm drunk, but I'll be adoring you from now until morning and long after, though I'll never know your name, because as usual, I'm too shy to ask. I took the DLR for the first time in ages this week, because I just haven't been in that part of London and done that for a long time. But I had this moment when I saw this guy, and I was like, oh my God, wow. It was the first time in a very long time, possibly ever, that I have wanted a man to speak to me on public transport. I say that because it never really ends well normally. I think I talked on my other podcast, Jennifer Dates, which I'm obliged to remind you is also available for download. One of the most memorable times is when a guy started talking to me and then literally tried to drag me off of a train to go to his house. And in typical London fashion, nobody did anything. But so I normally don't welcome the idea of conversation when I am on the move through public transport. But this would have been the one exception. He didn't say anything to me, and I didn't say anything to him, because even when I've had a bit to drink, I am still painfully unable to talk to strangers. So I can't tell if it's because I'm a traditionalist or just because I just genuinely don't know how to do it. I don't know how to talk to people. It's an affliction, you know. So I just write really dramatic things about them and never see them again. I feel like that's a healthy way of dealing with things, right? That's fine. That's totally normal. Very cool, very normal. Until next week, that is all. That was fancy, wasn't it? I thought I'd try a different way of doing the whole, right, that's me off kind of thing. Anyway, you can find more of my work on my website, which is jenniferwan.com. You can also find me on social media with the username Miss J Squared on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, Tumblr, Rumble, YouTube, all the places. I don't know why I sort of and ah through this bit every week, because I do it every week. But I think that's just how I talk, and that's fine, right? Anyways, you can also support the show on Patreon. I probably pronounce that a different way every week. I'm sorry about that. Thank you to my Patreon supporters, Amanda, Kylie, Melissa, Anna, Sam, Katie, Christina, Josie, Gabriella, David, and Eleanor. You can see me doing poetry this Friday in London at the Poetry Cafe in Covent Garden. It's going to be very fun, I'm sure. And I will see you next week. Good night, my love.